Today is Thursday, October the 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, France will return 26 works of art to Benin later this month. The 26 pieces from the collection known as the Abomey Treasures were looted by French colonial forces in 1892.
They include three royal statues from the Royal Kingdom of Dahomey. These are beautiful hybrid figures, half man, half animal, absolutely stunning carving in there. There's a wooden throne that represents the king surrounded by his servants.
A Brazilian Senate committee recommends criminal charges against President Jair Bolsonaro for his mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic. New figures from the UN's International Labour Organization indicate the global labour market has been slow to bounce back from the COVID-19 pandemic, hitting especially lower-income countries.
In low- and middle-income countries, fiscal constraints and slow vaccination progress are expected to continue to hinder progress.
And U.S. federal law enforcement agencies and the European Union's law enforcement agency, Europol, announced dozens of arrests to break up a global operation that sold illegal drugs using a shadowy realm of the internet. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on International Edition. Stay tuned. And for our top story, internal documents at Facebook show that the country was lit on fire after controversial comments from then-President Donald Trump following the death in police custody of George Floyd in Minneapolis. AP's Ed Donahue has the story.
In May of last year, Donald Trump posted on Twitter and Facebook about the thugs in Minneapolis and said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
We can't allow a situation like happened in Minneapolis to descend further into lawless anarchy and chaos.
Facebook's own analysis shows immediately hate speech and violence reports skyrocketed on the site. Facebook took no action. CEO Mark Zuckerberg claimed last year the post didn't break company rules, but the platform's automated controls were almost 90% certain it violated company policies against inciting violence. Twitter covered the Trump tweet with a warning. The former president has been suspended from both Twitter and Facebook. I'm Ed Donahue.
A new passport marks a milestone in how the U.S. recognizes the rights of people who do not identify as male or female. AP Washington correspondent Saga Megani reports.
For the first time, the State Department has issued a passport with an X gender description. It will not say who received the passport, but that the option will be more broadly available next year. America's special diplomatic envoy for LGBTQ rights calls them historic moves, saying a person can live with more dignity and respect when their identity documents reflect their true identity. Australia and Canada are among other nations that let citizens designate a gender other than male or female on passports. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And a federal judge has rejected a bid by Southwest Airlines pilots to block the carrier from imposing a COVID-19 vaccine mandate. AP Sagar Magani joins us again with this report.
The pilots' union asked for a temporary restraining order after Southwest asked all employees to get vaccinated. A district judge denied the request, saying the airline is within its power to require vaccination as a safety measure and to maintain operations. Southwest is giving employees until November 24th to either show proof of vaccination or ask for a medical or religious exemption. It's recently weakened the requirement by saying workers who fail to comply will not be fired. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Voice of America.
U.S. federal law enforcement agencies and the European Union's law enforcement agency, Europol, have announced dozens of arrests to break up a global operation that sold illegal drugs using a shadowy realm of the internet.
We are here today to expose those who seek the shadows of the internet to peddle killer pills worldwide. Thanks to unprecedented international law enforcement cooperation, 150 darknet drug traffickers have been arrested around the world, including 65 right here in the United States.
That was Lisa Monaco, Deputy Attorney General at the U.S. Department of Justice. Investigators say the fake drugs were primarily made in laboratories in Mexico using chemicals imported from China. Prosecutors also targeted drug dealers who operated home labs to manufacture fake prescription pain pills. The international police agency Europol worked alongside the U.S. Justice Department's Joint Criminal Opioid and Darknet Enforcement Team. U.S. officials said investigations are continuing and more arrests are expected.
Voice of America.
President Joe Biden addressed the annual summit of 18 Asia-Pacific nations by video, where world powers have dueled over trade and other issues. AP's correspondent Julie Walker reports.
The White House says Biden will reaffirm U.S. support for ASEAN-led regional architecture and discuss his vision for working together with allies and partners to address issues facing the Indo-Pacific region. It's the first time since 2017 that a U.S. president is attending the summit. Yesterday, Biden called the relationship essential after announcing a $100 million initiative to beef up engagement in the face of China's growth as a national security and economic adversary. The funding covers health spending, a new climate initiative, education, and programs to bolster economic recovery. I'm Julie Walker.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. France will return 26 works of art to Benin later this month in fulfillment of a 2017 pledge made by French President Emmanuel Macron. On Wednesday, Macron attended an official farewell ceremony at the Kwai Branly Museum, where the cultural objects are currently exhibited. Macron said that handing over the art pieces represented an opportunity for the people of Africa to be able to speak their truth through their artifacts. The 26 pieces from the collection known as the Abomey Treasures were looted by French colonial forces in 1892. And they said that the restitution of the artifacts mark a potential milestone in the fight by African countries to recover works looted by Western explorers and colonizers in the 19th century. Reporter Catherine Field, who is in Paris, visited the exhibition at the Kwai Branly Museum. She tells me that Western museums have often resisted calls to return African art to their countries of origin, arguing that those countries lack the necessary infrastructure to safely store and care for the artworks.
So, Catherine, what is the history and significance of this artwork, and when was it taken or stolen?
This is exactly the question. Was it taken? Was it stolen? Was it snatched? Was it given over as a sort of token of appreciation? These specific artifacts are 26 pieces that are on display at the moment in the Musée Quai Branly here in Paris. They include three royal statues from the royal kingdom of Dahomey. These are beautiful hybrid figures, half man, half animal, absolutely stunning carving in there. There's a wooden throne that represents the king surrounded by his servants, particularly stunning because it was a single piece of wood. You've got four palace doors from the palace of Aubameyang. You've got a throne, a sculpted throne, and you've got various Wara staff. So these are pieces that many of them were looted and then were handed over to the museums here in France when they came back at the end of the 19th century. And the idea is now that these 26 artifacts will sometime later this month be handed back to Benin. The paperwork will all get done and they will then head home.
They'll be shipped off to Benin, formerly Dahomey. Now, the cultural minister in Benin says that the 26 pieces do not represent all their requests. Do we know anything about the other artwork that is not part of these 26 pieces, and is France planning to return the other artwork?
Well, that has been the big criticism of French President Emmanuel Macron. Remember back in 2017, he made that landmark speech to students in Ouagadougou, where he said that what he really wanted was for African youth to be able to have access to their heritage in Africa, not in Europe. And it is known that there are at least 90,000 artifacts from sub-Saharan Africa in France alone. And in fact, at the Musée Quiberonly, they say they've got about 70,000 artifacts there. So they say they are slowly going through the process of working out which ones really were stolen, which ones should stay here because they were a gift. But you know, the bottom line is that there is a debate here in France as well as to whether or not they should go back. Mm. They say it's against the law. There are laws in France which stop pieces of artifacts, art, anything, leaving French museums and leaving the country. And that is why there is this law that only came in December 2020 that allows these 26 artifacts to go back. So a long way to go yet.
Is Benin the only country whose artwork is being returned? Are they considering returning other artwork that might be in their possession?
They are talking about it. But you again, we're looking at a speech, a promise back in 2017, and very few actual pieces have been handed back. There's been a sword handed back to Senegal. There's going to be later this year, the talking drum will be returned to Côte d'Ivoire. So yes, big gestures, big talk, but very little actually being sent back. Mm. Another reason the French say they're not sending them back yet is that they want to make sure that these pieces are well preserved when they return. And that's why you've got two curators from Benin actually at the Quiberonly Museum in Paris at the moment, looking at these works of art, learning more about how they're going to be presented when they go home. And you really, you just look at the faces of these two specialists who are here. One of them, a curator from the Royal Palaces of Abomey, he's delighted to look at them and delighted to get tips and ideas and assistance and how they're eventually going to show these artifacts when they get them home.
Right. I think part of the argument has always been that these countries, the original owners of this artwork, do not have the facilities or the infrastructure to house them. Why has it taken this long for France to return this artwork? And is it pressure or is there some other factor at play right now?
Two things, really. One is, yes, you're quite right that there was, they were saying all the time, they were hiding behind the fact that there was nowhere for these artworks to be shown. So France is giving 35 million euros to help build that museum where the Abomey treasures will eventually be shown. But you again go back to this being French President Emmanuel Macron, a young president born without all the baggage of the previous presidents of having a colonial attitude to Africa. And he's still the first president who's really said, it's time to just stop all this colonial attitude. And you again, you just think about last month, President Macron met with young African students, young African entrepreneurs as well, who came to France for that Africa summit. He is reaching out to that generation because subtly, he believes that's where the future is. It's better to go and aim at young entrepreneurs than to try and work through some of the less democratic forces that are in place in these African countries.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She was speaking to me from Paris in France. A British court will consider this week whether Julian Assange, the founder of the WikiLeaks website, can be extradited to the United States on charges of hacking and theft. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, new allegations have emerged in recent weeks that could have an impact on the judge's decision.
Supporters of Julian Assange staged protests outside a London court ahead of his two-day appeal hearing, which begins Wednesday. United States prosecutors appealed a January district court ruling that Assange should not be extradited because of concerns he would commit suicide in a maximum security US prison. That premise will be challenged by prosecutors, says lawyer Nick Vamos, a former head of extradition at Britain's Crown Prosecution Service.
What the US government have now done is come forward with a specific assurance about exactly how, where, and in what condition he will be detained. So provided his medical condition and his risk of suicide hasn't changed, then you would assume that the US government have met the test that the district judge in the first judgment set.
Other developments since the January ruling could affect the case. A former WikiLeaks insider turned FBI informer has said he fabricated evidence used by the prosecution. Meanwhile, Yahoo News last month published a story alleging that the CIA plotted to kidnap or even kill Assange in 2017. Yahoo says the story was based on interviews with 30 former U.S. intelligence and national security officials. Again, Nick Vamos.
It will be argued, well, if the CIA were willing to assassinate him, that's sort of one arm of the U.S. government, then really you can't trust the other arm of the U.S. government, the Department of Justice, to act fairly and to prosecute him in accordance with, you know, human rights standards and what we would consider to be fair trials.
The CIA and U.S. lawyers leading the extradition appeal have yet to comment on the Yahoo News story. Former CIA director and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told the Megyn Kelly podcast that all actions taken were consistent with U.S. law. In 2010 and 2011, Assange oversaw the publication by WikiLeaks of tens of thousands of diplomatic cables and military reports relating to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Assange says the leak exposed abuses by the U.S. military, a main reason why supporters say the issue of press freedom is at stake. Julia Hall is from Amnesty International.
And there is the huge, huge issue of global media freedom and the way that this case could set a terrible precedent for any journalist, any publisher trying to expose the misdeeds and wrongdoing of government so that government can be held accountable.
Assange is being held at a London prison as he is considered a flight risk. He faces 18 US federal charges relating to allegations of hacking, theft of classified material, and the disclosure of the identities of US informants, which prosecutors say put their lives at risk. A verdict on the extradition appeal will likely take several weeks. Both sides can appeal the decision to Britain's Supreme Court, which could take several years. However, Supreme Court judges may rule against considering the case. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Lebanon continues to grapple with the severe economic crisis that has plagued the country for the last 2 years. The country that once attracted many shoppers from the Middle East is closing its popular shopping malls. As George Eid reports from Beirut, many shops are shutting down due to a lack of customers.
Beirut, once known as the shopping capital of the Middle East with its dazzling malls, has now lost its title as Lebanon continues to struggle with an unprecedented economic meltdown. Some of the major malls in Beirut have partially or entirely shut down since October 2019 when the economic crisis started. Leah Medumet, who lives in Beirut, explains that the crisis has affected the malls she used to visit gravely.
Due to electricity outage and many factors, such as many malls did not have the generators before the situation, so they used to shut their doors down at a very early time. Many brands will for sure shut down their doors, and we're buying our clothes right now from just small shops.
Marcelino Bitar, who works for one of the capital's renowned malls, has been witnessing it turn into a shell of its former self. He says that it shows how difficult the situation is getting in Lebanon.
He says malls have been affected deeply by the economic crisis. I have seen many of my friends lose their jobs there. Shops are closing down and they are laying people off.
Many of Lebanon's malls had to shut down for a few weeks from September to October due to the electric blackouts. When some of them reopened for business, many of the shops had decided to close down their business for good. Nicolas Chamas, the chairman of Beirut's Traders Association, fears that this is only the beginning.
Because the purchasing power of the Lebanese population has collapsed, and thus they had much less disposable income to consume. So we have been squeezed as a trade sector, and particularly the malls, between a rock and a hard space. So the malls have been losing some of their tenants, slowly at first, but then built a lot of speed. And especially since this has been compounded by the corona disease, whereby the malls were closed you know, for several weeks and even several months at times.
As the Lebanese government still searches for an economic plan that would help the country get out of its current situation, the Lebanese lira has lost more than 90% of its value already. This is Joe Jade reporting for VOA from Beirut.
And in other news, Pope Francis has accepted an invitation to visit Canada, where he faces calls for him to apologize for the Catholic Church's role in former schools for indigenous people, where children were subjected to abuse, rape, and malnutrition. The Vatican said in a statement on Wednesday that Canada's bishops had formally invited him to make a visit, which would start a process of reconciliation with indigenous people. And for more on this story and other breaking news, remember to visit our website at voanews.com. And remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. A Brazilian Senate committee has recommended criminal charges against President Jair Bolsonaro for his mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic. EP's Tim Maguire reports.
A Senate committee in Brazil, following a six-month investigation, calls for the criminal prosecution of President Jair Bolsonaro for his missteps that have led to more than 600,000 COVID-19 deaths in the country, second only to the United States. The charges range from charlatanism to misuse of public funds and crimes against humanity. Since the start of the pandemic, Bolsonaro has sabotaged local efforts aimed at stopping the virus spread, saying the economy needed to keep humming. He insistently touted a discredited anti-malaria drug while raising doubts about vaccines and the use of masks. Bolsonaro denies any wrongdoing. Any decision to prosecute is up to the prosecutor general he appointed and who is widely viewed as protecting him. I'm Tim McGuire.
New figures from the UN's International Labour Organization indicate the global labour market has been slow to bounce back from the COVID-19 pandemic, with the economies of lower-income countries faring worse than those of the wealthier countries. The Sachline reports for VOA from Geneva.
ILO economists have been tracking the impact of COVID-19 on the world of work since March 2020. Early this year, they had anticipated a fragile but steady recovery in the global job market. However, they acknowledged this relative optimism now has faded due to new waves of the pandemic and slower than expected economic recovery. Based on its findings, the UN agency now projects the number of global hours worked this year will be 4.3% below pre-pandemic levels. This is the equivalent to a loss of 125 million full-time jobs. ILO Director General Guy Ryder says more worrying still is what he sees as the two-speed recovery between higher and lower income countries.
This is reflected in the fact that the higher income countries with more resources managed to recover in 2021 at least to some extent, whilst lower income countries continue to suffer very severely from the pandemic. That the pandemic has exacerbated inequalities between countries as well as within them.
Ryder blames this growing divergence on differences in the rollout of COVID-19 vaccinations and fiscal stimulus packages. He says the pace of each nation's recovery depends heavily on its ability to vaccinate its population. He says recovery also depends on the ability of countries to provide a financial cushion to protect workers and businesses from the economic impact of the pandemic.
In low and middle income countries, fiscal constraints and slow vaccination progress are expected to continue to hinder progress. And without concrete financial and technical support, the great divergence between developed and developing countries will persist.
The ILO reports the prospects for labor market recovery for the rest of the year remain weak and uncertain. Ryder says no country or region will get out of this crisis alone. He says the only sustainable path out of this health and socioeconomic dilemma is for all nations to work together. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Madagascar is known for its rich and diverse wildlife, but experts say forest degradation is a growing threat to both animals and humans. As Anne Nzwanku reports from Madagascar's Kitongambarika Forest, there are success stories thanks to reforestation efforts meant to reverse the effects of climate change.
Last year, this waterfall in the Kitongambarika Forest disappeared for 6 months as many waterways in the forest dried up. The state, with the help of the local population, launched a reforestation program. Anne Chambu is a farmer who contributes to the reforestation. He says the villagers use these water sources for their farms. He is proud to contribute to the reforestation of this forest, which is a source of life. Chambu adds their children will not have the same environmental problems as they do. The south of Madagascar is suffering a 4-year drought that the World Food Programme says is the worst in 40 years. The country has also lost nearly 40% of its natural forest. Advocates blame climate change, but also the cutting of trees by the local populations. The Kitongambarika Forest is a model of reforestation in the country. It has been reconstituted to more than 60% of its original size. 39,000 hectares have been restored out of a total area of 59,000 hectares. It is an important conservation area, protecting many endemic and threatened species.
Elle contribue surtout à l'atténuation du changement climatique au niveau mondial.
Vahinala Hararinirina, the environment minister, says the forest of Kitongambarika contributes especially to the mitigation of climate change at the global level. It is a carbon sink at the global level, in the context where greenhouse gas emissions are increasingly important at the global level. Madagascar's contribute to this global objective. According to data drawn from the Global Carbon Project, Madagascar produced less than 0.01% of all the carbon dioxide generated in the world. Researchers say about 5% of the world's animals and plant species live on the island. Andri Rajuelina, Madagascar's president, calls for everyone to do their part.
Ce que nous demandons, c'est que les pays qui polluent le plus.
He says what he's asking is that the country that pollutes the most should help the country that pollutes the least, so that countries can really mitigate the impact of this climate change and help the population in this part of the Malagasy island. During the upcoming UN Climate Change Conference, participating states hope to reach an agreement to limit global warming and avert more crises like the drought that threatened Madagascar's forest land. Anne Zwanke for VOA News, Kitongambarika, Madagascar.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a great week ahead.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water.